Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 244, top of the day to you, Tom.
G'day, Leah.
Oh, g'day.
G'day.
You're at home today just because you have to deal with little people who are ill.
Yes. Normally it's a daycare day. But my youngest friend has a bit of the old hand, foot, mouth, so can't go near other kids. So I have been not in ISO, but just keeping her away from everybody for a couple of days.
Is she crying because her mouth is sore all the time?
Nope. Oh, she's pretty chill. Yeah. I mean, look, I say that. She's a pretty grumbly little lady anyway. So she's grumbly, but no more than usual.
Yeah, right.
And she's happy at the moment because I set her up with a bunch of snacks and she's watching some Wiggles.
Perfect. I wish I could be doing that. That sounds great. Once you start watching the Wiggles, you can't stop.
I have come to absolutely hate Celtic music now. Anthony won't stop banging on about the bagpipes. So I've been mixing it up because normally it's Wiggles or Sesame Street. We alternate between the two, but we've recently been getting into some Blues Clues.
Oh, yeah.
And that's better. It's good. It's good gear.
Mixing it up for you, at least you wouldn't have seen it 400 times.
Well, it was off the air for many years. Steve was the original guy and then Joe came in.
Yeah.
And then, I've forgotten the new guy's name. But he's meant to be the cousin of those two guys. And they're on the show all the time. They come and help him out with stuff. So it tickles all the nostalgia stuff from watching it when I was younger with my younger brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something in it for everyone. It's not just for the kids anymore, which is good because the kids are not the only ones having to watch it.
No, it's nice. They've worked in some good adult messages and stuff.
Speaking of adults, we've got a John Hamm related quiz today.
Wow.
He's a man who I always think of him as a man, like an adult man. In fact, I don't think I could picture him as a child.
I'm sure he was born with slicked over hair.
Yeah, probably. I'd say so. I've watched a few things. I haven't had a chance to watch the new Game of Thrones, unfortunately. I was really keen to.
Neither
but then
have I.
4 million things happened last night and suddenly it was 9 o'clock and I went, oh, I've got to get up early tomorrow. That's the end of my day. Okay, it's all done. It's done and dusted. So we'll get to it.
I was going to watch it, but then instead I kept watching Taskmaster. So.
Fair enough. You have your priorities. I have heard it's quite good, though. A lot of people were like, that was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, I'll get to it. We'll talk.
Yeah, definitely.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
Let's kick into this news. I've got a few interesting bits and pieces for you, and I think you've got a fun fact as well.
I do. I've got a handful of news and a good fun fact for you about an actor rather than a particular film.
Wonderful. That's exciting. Well, do you want to kick off? Because I often get to this point and I go, I started last week. And then I go, did I? And then I think in my head, oh, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
The biggest news of the week for me was that HBO renewed the rehearsal for season two, which is Nathan Fielder's show. The finale happened this week. It made me have all sorts of different conflicting feelings.
Oh, gosh.
It's the most creative show on television and there's nothing else close to it. I don't remember the last time I saw something so intricately done. Mm. I have no idea what season two will be and I can't talk. Like, the only reason I'm not going to give a breakdown of the finale this week is I can't talk about it if you haven't watched the other episodes, because it doesn't make sense when you have watched the other ones completely. And he's really, really messing with us on what's real, what's not, telling us who's an actor, who's not an actor. All this, it's clever. It's clever. And a lot of people have been saying that he's been quite sadistic and manipulative throughout this series, even more so than Nathan for you. And all I'll say is he addresses that head on in the very last episode where he's been doing prank shows like this for years now and it finally comes back to get him. It backfires in the most unimaginable way that reinforces the central theme of the show, which was not what I expected at the beginning. But when you actually see the end, and it has the most haunting killer punchline for the episode that's just stuck with me for days. I'm going back to rewatch it again with the knowledge of where it leads, because it when you watch it, it goes off the rails, but then you're reminded by the fact that it only looks like reality television. What you're actually watching is constructed, and the person starring in it is the puppeteer. God, it's intense.
Yeah, there's a lot going on by the sounds of it. And the fact that your reaction, you know, you had mixed feelings, it was everything and nothing and all of the things that you expected. I think that from the sounds of it, that sounds exactly like what everyone should have expected.
Yeah, it was what we should have expected, and it's also clearly what Nathan wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He as the show went on, he stepped more and more into the spotlight, which is crazy because we knew from the beginning he was the star of the show, but the way he positions the show is that he is the co-lead, and whoever's he's helping is meant to be the protagonist. But the show is basically stop giving so much of a shit about what other people might think of you, because everyone else is busy dealing with their own shit and no one else thinks of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the philosophical takeaway I was expecting at the beginning of the show, where he helps people rehearse for life situations. But it more and more just seems that, you know, he learns what we all know is that you can't control chaos.
Yeah. If
things go off the rails quickly, that's what life is. You will always jump towards a worst case scenario because your brain thinks that, when in reality, no one else cares.
So it's almost like he's reminding us that what we thought when we were teenagers was not the case, where everybody's looking at you because you're wearing the wrong color slap band, I don't know, on your wrist, and your shoelaces are not long enough because double knotting is the cool thing to do, and you're just going to be look like the biggest fool for arriving with your single laced sneakers, where in reality no one, they're all just happy that they've got their slap band in the right spot.
So it's interesting that you give that analogy. Supplant that 20 years further, and the show is that take on parenthood.
Hmm.
On am I fucking my kid up? And it is all those anxieties you had as a teenager and this sort of stuff that, yes, you mature out of that phase, but when you become a parent, you don't even realize that you slip back into it in a way of you're constantly questioning yourself and measuring yourself against other parents and this sort of stuff. It's really clever, especially when it's by a guy who's not a parent himself, to take that angle. Well, yeah. If you have not watched this, it is only 6 half-hour things. It is the best thing I've seen all year. I'm telling you now, it will be my number one at the end of the year list. It beats The Boys. It beats Peacemaker. All the other stuff that I've loved this year has not left me with philosophical conflict in the same way a weird docu-comedy thing has.
Be interesting to see what season two is going to be then, because he's giving you everything you shouldn't expect now, then that's the same for next season.
But the most meta twist he could do is to become a viewer of season one and attempt to correct things that happened in season one to see if he can – so that season one was the rehearsal for the actual – rehearsal. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's where he's at with this stuff. There's one episode called The Fielder Method where he sets up his own acting school because he needs to train actors in his particular prank style so they can be on his show. And he has insecurities at how the school is going. So he then hires actors, including someone to play himself, and then casts himself as one of the students and recreates the course that he was doing, but him sitting as a student watching. and then finds that that isn't satisfying enough. So this particular student whose life he was inhabiting, that he's recreating, he moves into his apartment and hires people that look like this guy's roommates and like starts living his life to try and have a field experience of what. It's the most rabbit hole shit ever. I'm sorry. And this is the news and I'm rambling on something I said I wouldn't review, but oh my God.
Oh, well, I'm glad that it's making you think like that for so long. That means it's good,
right?
I'm
going to be thinking about this for a long time. Yeah.
One thing that I've been thinking about, not for a long time, but the last probably 20 minutes, is how bad the Marvel special effects crunch is in that department and the culture. Apparently, it is quite relentless there. The poor VFX people really struggle to meet the studio's deadlines, so much so that people have started anonymously speaking out about it. I think it started on Reddit, then ended up on Twitter. And it's you can read about it in a lot of places. One person said Marvel tends to run everything they do that way. So when they're talking about the movies and the series, like it's all pretty much the same thing. You can work over 80 hours a week for months at a time, and basically you will – one example was they finished work 9 a.m. in the morning, then they had a preview in London that evening. The version that the special effects person worked on that day was the same version that they were going to be seeing at the premiere in London. So it was up until the wire, and apparently a lot of it is all up until the wire. There's so many different stories. Quite a long article on IGN. That's where I was reading it from. But apparently, it's kind of the place where special effects people know they've got the worst methodology in terms of work culture and the crunch. So, be interesting to see now that this story's out. Will Mr. Mickey Mouse come out and sort of try and change that culture? I don't know. That kind of crunch is a hard thing.
I don't think so at all. And it's a difficult one because I understand that position of crunch, and crunch is an awful thing and this sort of stuff. But the Marvel movie method and TV method as well is very different than the normal thing, which is heavily locked down script. And if there's special effects stuff happening, that is locked down before production starts and the VFX crew begin. Marvel, since the very first Iron Man, they threw out the script the day before they were about to start filming and improvised plenty of it. And that works for them. And they find their story in editing. So, you know, Doctor Strange 2 changed several times, especially because of COVID, and had to come out after Spider-Man No Way Home. So there was all this stuff that had already been planned that they had to get rid of and change things like that. So I completely get that it sucks from our industry appreciates preparation, which is the VFX, but the whole Marvel method of how they do their films and every other way seems to work really well by being loose, reactive and adaptable. So I don't see them shifting that. They will definitely try and make amends somehow, whether that's more money or more accolade or whatever it is. But, you know, that's one of those, how do you shift an industry? How do you
that's
you know
working well,
they're the top dog for a reason. Yeah. They're a top dog for a reason.
Yeah, I just hope that they don't steer too many people away from that industry, because I mean, I assume that the people working in Marvel special effects are some of the best there is. But if they burn them out, if they end up having anxiety attacks over this, which is what some of them have said, are they just going to leave the whole industry?
Yeah, I don't think the whole industry will. And it's one of those things that it's always going to look amazing on your resume. So people will always want to do their time there to get out. So maybe instead it will become more of a training ground.
Yeah, maybe.
Thing.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'll tell you one thing I do know, for talking about labs and cooking things up and all this sort of stuff. How's this for a story? The Hemsworths, here in Australia, they're known for getting involved in some good animal-related charity gear. They're all about that stuff. This week, they've announced that they are chucking a whole bunch of money behind a DNA reconstruction project that's taking place in Melbourne Uni to bring back the extinct Tasmanian tiger, a.k.a. the Thysaline. So in the same way that places in the Northern Hemisphere have been working for a few years now and bring back the woolly mammoth by splicing its DNA with elephant DNA and all sorts of things like that. Well, not all sorts, just elephant DNA. We've watched Jurassic Park enough times to know that you shouldn't
splice. No mosquitoes.
No, nothing else. they've thrown a couple of million bucks at this project that is reasonably far along. They've got, you know, they went extinct in the early 20th century, maybe like 100 years ago or something like that. But there are plenty of fossil remains, but there's also like displayed, what's the word? I'm looking at taxidermied
versions. Yeah, right.
In museums and things like that. So there's plenty of actual Thysaline DNA that they can work with. I remember being at school and being excited hearing about Dolly the sheep.
The cloned sheep back
in the day. It's amazing to hear how far they've come from that of not just cloning things that were living, but now it is moving into Jurassic Park territory of bringing things back. Now, that, of course, creates the conundrum of where do you draw the line? What do you bring back? What don't you bring back? Is it things that existed at the same time as humans? Is it things that went extinct due to the actions of humans? Or is it things we think are cool shit?
The dodo will be next.
You know, then are you looking at like, what's it called? I think it's called a Diplurodon or something like that, which was like a giant ground sloth that died out about 3 million years ago.
That would be okay. It could hang out with the other sloths.
Oh, this thing is like 1.5 to 2 times the height of a bear.
I don't think humans are going to allow large animals to come back because we don't want to give them any of our habitat, which was their habitat that we stole, but it's ours.
Yeah, this is it's slippery slope stuff. That's what I mean. I think you've got to determine this in and put it out publicly and get people, you know. I don't know. Do we get a say in that? Is it controlled by the government? This is too deep and heady a subject for me to be able to crack early on a Tuesday morning.
It really does sound a lot like a movie plot, though.
Yeah.
Is this a movie? Are we maybe it is. Maybe we're in a movie. Oh, gosh. Existential maybe, crisis maybe it's time. What about we talk about Western films like our cowboys doing their thing? A while ago, I was speaking about Kevin Costner, who loves doing everything.
Notorious cowboy lover.
Loves a good cowboy story. Loves the genre of cowboys?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Great. So he had part written a movie script, was going to produce it through his production company, I think. I think he might be directing it as well as starring in it. And it's called Horizon. There's no Forbidden West. There's no Zero Dawn. So obviously a lot less interesting, but we'll carry on through the story anyway. Luke Wilson has been added to the cast. Sam Worthington and Sienna Miller are already there. And it's this one about 15 years span, like it's an epic film. Of course it is. Kevin Costner's in, like, behind it. Post-Civil War, think of it then, and it's all about the expansion and settlement of the American West. I think people have watched this a lot, and I think people have also played it in Red Dead Redemption game. So,
what are you going to add, Kevin?
Well, he's going to do this bit where he dances with wolves. It's original. It's going to be great. You don't want to watch it?
I don't enjoy Kevin Costner directed stuff. I don't know why. It's all just a bit too heavy-handed.
I rewatched half of Waterworld.
Waterworld.
Not long ago. Because the first time I watched it was quite a long time after the hype of how terrible it was had sort of died down. And I watched it, I was like, oh, it's not as bad as they said it was. It wasn't that bad. But then I rewatched that bit of it recently and I was like, oh, it's not great. It's just
pretty bad.
Not as bad.
It did lead to a fantastic stage show at Universal Studios. So
we've got that. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good then. What else have you got?
Impractical Jokers. Oh, so I've been enjoying this season. I think I don't know if I've said it on the show or not, but it took a few episodes to get fired up and shift formats after losing Joe, one of the, you know, founders.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Probably the funniest of the four. Mm. And they've had celebs on this season and they've gone bigger and bigger with the celebs throughout the episodes as to what their involvement with the show has been. So some of them have just been, you know, a few interstitials throughout the show and then helping with the prank at the end or something like that. The last episode of this block of the season was Brooke Shields, and she was involved in the entirety of the episode, played the games with the guys throughout, you know, paired up and stuff, and the game for everything, and it clicked. And that, like, I was like, ah, this is what the show needs to be moving forward. And they seem to agree, which is great. They want the celebs moving more involved moving forward. But the rest of season 10, I think that was the tail end of season 9. Season 10, they're already well into filming and will be coming along hopefully later in the year. And two of the celebs that they were willing to share that are involved already, one, John Mayer.
I have not thought of that man for a very long time. That you probably saw my reaction. I was like, name recognition, who is, oh gosh, okay, it's 2005.
Yep. Now I got a bit of time for John Mayer. I've seen him live back in the day. I haven't listened to him much in years, but whatever, he's very funny.
Oh yeah, he's funny.
He's popped up on a lot of comedy stuff over the years. He's done a bit of SNL, all that sort of gear, and he can hold his own. So I'm expecting that should be pretty strong. But the one that has me going, all right, they've got Post Malone. Now, I know you're not.
I know him, but don't ask me about any of the songs. But I know him and I've seen, you know, little snippets of interviews and whatnot. He seems, I don't know the word. It seems like he's you know, like he can have a chat. He seems
good.
Friendly.
That's,
yeah. He's not too cool.
So
you know what I mean?
Earth.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
He's just a guy and he's super self-deprecating. And that's a different vibe to all the other celebs they've had on the show. Everyone else has been funny or played it big. But to have someone who comes in and kind of plays it humble will be a really different angle. But that was the name I told Shay. And she was like, oh, that's amazing.
Really?
I mean, Posty is one of the biggest pop stars on the planet at the moment. You know, he's huge, and with a certain demographic, this is like getting Tom Cruise or something. You know, it's the pinnacle of so to have him on an episode is going to be pretty special.
Oh,
I'm excited.
That'd be good, and it's probably, like you said, an amazing get for Impractical Jokers as well. Like, this may even open them up to a brand new audience.
It works both ways. Because there's a whole bunch of parents that won't know much about Post Malone that are going to see him being funny and friendly on their kid's favorite show and go, oh, this guy with tattoos all over his face that seems like he mumbles when he sings, he's actually pretty talented.
He's all right.
He is. he's a good songwriter.
Do you and Shay have a listen to him during car trips and stuff?
All the time.
Yeah, nice. That's really
he did the main song from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So that's kind of where we started bumping him a bit, but he's got a whole bunch of good songs. And he's done songs with Ozzy Osbourne. So it's not just with rappers or R&B people.
It obviously got his heroes that he wants to grab a hold of. And when you're as big as he is, then sounds like you can get them.
And it's just, he's so friendly and everyone's just like, he's just a pleasure to work with.
Aww.
He's just happy to be there.
Oh,
you
that's
know?
Really nice. Oh, I like that. That's really nice. Look, someone who was just happy to be there but is now a little bit worried about potentially not being there again is Neil Gaiman. His show for The Sandman came to Netflix. I really want to watch it. It's on my list of shows to watch because I listened to the audio play or drama serial. It was kind of like a radio serial, actually. It was great. Really, really enjoyed it and want to watch this. But he said he's not feeling as confident about a second series simply because Netflix really wants to make sure that this show is a massive success because he said it was not a cheap one for Netflix to make. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they don't base it on how many people have jumped on the first episode. They base it on how many people have watched the whole series to completion, which makes sense. Yep. You know, that makes total sense. So he kind of put that word out there on Twitter when people were asking him about a second season. And he was kind of saying, so if you want more, watch the whole thing and get your friends to watch the whole thing as well. So I will, Neil. It's on my list of things to do. But apparently there's also a big thing about within the first month, Netflix noticed, you know, pays a lot of attention to completion as well. So I think the time's ticking for me and for Neil. Poor us. Maybe we'll have to fall asleep and the Sandman can wake us. No, he puts you to sleep. Oh, I can't remember.
Did you know that listening to this podcast gives you immunity against energy vampires? Keep listening to We Are The Watchers.
In the realm of unexpected spin-offs, I'm going to throw out one that might just take the cake.
I'm sitting down.
In development from the creators of Cobra Kai.
Yeah, which is the spin-off of...
A spin-off, and they've done some other interesting spin-off work. There is a spin-off from Ferris Bueller in pre-production, I should say. They're just getting started on it. Uh-huh. It's called Sam and Victor's Day Off. Now, you might not remember who Sam and Victor are because Sam and Victor were never named in the film. The two valets, remember, that they take Cameron's car to, or Cameron's father's car, and they take in the parking garage, and you'll remember that the two valets take the car for a joyride and rack up the miles on the car throughout the day.
That's right. I do remember. And then they were trying to put the car in reverse to get, yep.
So this film is going to be called Sam and Victor's Day Off, and it's taking place on the same day about what those two guys actually got up to on their day with the car.
That's impressive because it is now, what, 30-odd years since that film?
I believe that was 1984. No, it couldn't be 86.
Yeah, okay. There was a show in the maybe even the early 90s. I'm trying to remember. It was very similar to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was like the main character's name was Corey or Corky, someone can't lose. I remember.
Yeah, Corey, is it not Corey Hart can't lose? No. Yeah, something like that.
I'm sorry that you're potentially shouting at the podcast right now. But I just can't figure it out off the top of my head. But I enjoyed that show. But that was more of a, not a spin-off. It was like if this is what Ferris Bueller was, we're going to do that, but as a TV show with a whole lot of new characters, which was good. But spin-offs can be funny, right? Because you think about all the spin-offs that Happy Days had, and one of the spin-offs ended up being Mork and Mindy, you know, which was about aliens. And then you have Beverly Hills 90210 had a spin-off of Melrose Place was a spin-off of Beverly Hills 90210, and then Models, Inc. was a spin-off of Melrose Place, spin-off upon spin-off.
Parker Lewis.
Maybe the actor's name was Corey. Maybe that's where I'm thinking. Parker Lewis can't lose. Yeah. I like that show. I'm sure it's terrible to watch now. But at the time, it was so funny. I loved it. So a show that people really seem to love is The Morning Show. That's the one on Apple Plus with Reese and Jennifer and Juliana as well. Juliana Margulies is in it, or at least she appeared in the second season, and it's been announced that she will be in the third season as well. So that's exciting. And here's a little link to something later on. John Hamm's in it too. He's being cast as a corporate titan who sets his sights on UBA.
Nice. Look at you tying the content together.
That's right. Yes, so we'll be enjoying a wonderful quiz care of John Hamm later on. I got one more story.
Well, hit me with it, and then I'm going to bounce in with a fun fact.
It's time for us to get angry and cranky. Are you ready? Oh. So the residents of the Angelino Heights neighborhood in LA, not the biggest Fast and Furious fans around there, because every time a Fast and Furious movie comes out, then people go and want to recreate scenes from there around that neighborhood, and people are not that, as you can imagine, get a little bit sick of that. Another thing they get a bit sick of is when a new Fast and Furious film comes out and they're like, so we're going to film this big scene between the hours of 9 p.m. and 2 a.m. It's going to be flashing lights, like sirens, all that kind of thing, and cars, obviously. And they just have to put up with it, but they don't want to anymore, so they're going to have a protest this Friday. So tomorrow, if you're listening and I put this episode out the correct day, Friday there's going to be a bit of a protest of neighborhood that like neighbors around the area just going, we don't want any more Fast and Furiousness, please.
Oh my god, I hope they film it with drones and then use that as like background footage for the film.
Oh yeah, unpaid extras.
We've got to teach these people the importance of family.
So good. Wouldn't there be whole neighborhoods in particularly LA where people buy knowing that there's a famous street famous house on the street or whatever?
It's like the dickheads who moved in next to Luna Park and then complained because they had a roller coaster. Like, you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Ugh. Fun fact, please. Let's cleanse ourselves of all that anger.
You did a great job of tying some content to together today. So I want to do the same thing.
Nice.
And I want to talk about, if you think about the valets from Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
You'll remember one of them has a very interesting face. His name is Richard Edson. He's the guy that would be now known as Victor, whatever. And he's a character actor. You've seen it. He's been in like 111 different movies.
It's a lot. Different acting credits,
movies and television stuff. You've seen him in different stuff. But I thought this was pretty cool. He appears in four different films selected by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Those being Stranger Than Paradise, Ferris Bueller, Platoon, and Do the Right Thing, which were all in about a five-year gap. So he had a real string of really song stuff there. But not only that, he was also the original drummer for Sonic Youth.
Really?
Yeah, he's got all these cool connections. So he stars in an REM music video and all this sorts of stuff because he's got all the punk rock connections.
Mm.
However, and this is the thing that really blew my mind, this won't be, and now I don't think he will be involved in this new movie, unless there's some bit of like as old men talking about that day they had back in the day.
Oh, that'd be good. Whatever. See, in my head I was thinking, oh, it's probably going to be like a cameo where they go, all these kids, so annoying.
It's more likely that.
Yeah.
Or something, you know, or he's actually Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, or you know, there'll be tying knots. But he actually reprised the role of valet guy before as a cameo on the sitcom Happy Endings 10 years ago. I think this year, I think it was two married couple and one that just split up or something like that. And it's good. You'd know almost everybody in the cast because they've gone in to be.
I think I've seen it.
Matt and the reboot of Magnum. One of them's on that.
Oh
and,
yeah, okay.
Trust me, you know all the people from that show. There's a Wayans.
I know exactly what it is. Yeah, I did watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Valet guy. Who would have thought that the scruffy looking fella from Ferris Bueller, I could have milked that many fun facts out of.
It was good. And I must say that I did have a look at his photograph during the fun fact, and I 100% know him, and he's been in all of the things.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's one of those guys. He's like one of the FBI guys that show up in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Or, you know, where like, I've seen you in a lot of things.
You're in the things.
He's one of them. He's got a distinctive face.
Yeah, it's quite a long face. I find those kind of people, you go, oh, he was definitely in something that I've watched and I really loved. But then when you go through the list, you're like, oh, no, he's just been in a lot of things that I've watched. Nothing that I've necessarily loved. It's just he's in all of the things. Yeah. Watching suggestions. Let's get into it.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Now, last week we had Shay here and she was giving us watching suggestions for kids and that was really cool. Yes. A lot of good stuff in there. But it meant that I kind of backed off and I thought probably shouldn't talk about the fact that I watched Predator and Prey.
And likewise, I thought I best not talk about the vampire film on Netflix, Day Shift.
Oh, yeah. Watched. Yeah, right. How was it?
So perhaps, let's you and I talk about some adult kids.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. Prey, because I haven't watched it yet. I'm very keen to watch that.
So I'm not a big Predator fan, for no reason other than I just had never actually seen a Predator film before. I knew the lore. I knew what they were. I knew that there was some sort of – they lived in the same universe as aliens or the, you know, that kind of the alien. But I didn't know that much. I knew get me to the chopper and the meme of doing the arm wrestle, so it was cool. Yeah.
Handshake.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So I knew all of that.
Yeah, I got you pushing too many pencils.
So I knew that Prey was the prequel to it. So I watched that first. Yeah. Because I didn't know how to watch it. I was like, I'll just watch Prey. Everyone's speaking. I'll just watch that first. Really liked it. Thought it was really good. I really liked the premise of putting it back several hundred years. Well, not really. Maybe like 200 years. And watching people who are very skilled at living and hunting in their own environment suddenly become the hunted but not believe it at first. They're like, no. I mean, why would you? They're all like, no, it's a massive bear, or it's one of the wildcats from up in the hills, and obviously they learn that that's not the truth. So then going back and watching the first Predator film, where those guys were in a jungle that they were not the skilled living masters of, is probably a best way to term it for Naru, I think her name is.
Mm-hmm.
Nari? For the main character and the tribe in Prey. So I reckon you would really like it because I know that there's been some references to the fact that Predators could have been around back then.
So at the end of Predator 2, one character ends up on a Predator alien ship and sees a trophy rack that includes the alien you're talking about, which is they've referred to as a xenomorph, so a xenomorph skull. And human weapons from earlier centuries and this sort of stuff. So there was a flintlock pistol and this sort of stuff. So it was established that they have been coming here for a while, that this is almost like a training ground or hunting ground for them. And it's very, very interesting to me that your entry point to the franchise now is a team in their natural habitat, because it's always the opposite of, let's take highly skilled soldiers, put them in an unfamiliar situation, and they're being hunted. So everyone is unfamiliar with the setting. So having it flipped there to, that's a cool take.
I've heard that there are plans to have a sequel to the prequel.
I have heard so many interesting ideas thrown out of different moments in history that you get. There would be an amazing film where a samurai has his master slain by a predator and becomes a ronin and commits himself to hunting down the predator.
That whole Japanese setting would be amazing with the honor. A lot of time for that one. No, so I thoroughly enjoyed them. I'm not sure if I'm going to push myself through to the rest of the Predator series right now. I suspect there's a point where you should stop.
It's diminishing returns.
Okay.
But some of them have some good moments. Predator 2 is fine. Mm-hmm. It's cheesy. It's 80s. It doesn't capture the original magic. Predators is the one on the planet, directed by Robert Rodriguez, with a bunch of humans that are dropped onto a predator hunting
planet. It's always going to happen.
Yes, and there's a lot of big names in that. You're like, what are you doing? why are you here? And then there was the Predator one a few years ago from Shane Black. That was pretty rubbish.
That was the one with Alfie Allen, I think.
Yes. Oh, look, and again, there was a couple of good moments in that, but nothing holds up to the original.
Yeah.
And then you've got Alien vs. Predator and Alien vs. Predator Requiem, which is honestly one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Cool. That's praise right there. That sounds amazing. So
it's good to know that they've gotten things back on track.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. Foof.
Yes.
So you haven't been watching that.
No, I haven't watched that yet.
Day Shift is the one that I saw a lot of people talking about it, and some people were like, that was really fun, and other people were like, that was not good. So where do you sit?
I felt myself tugged in both directions.
Oh, no, conflicted.
So it's Jamie Foxx. The trailers and poster would lead you to believe that Snoop Dogg is in a lot, and Snoop is not.
Mm.
He clearly had a couple of days free for filming, and they add his scenes sprinkling through. Mm. Dave Franco is actually the co-lead.
Okay.
And I really loved his character. Do you remember that movie Idle Hands? Years ago with Devon Sawa and Seth Green, and it's about a guy whose hand gets possessed by the devil, and he cuts it off, and then it starts murdering everyone before the prom.
Such a
it's so weird. But Seth Green and Eldon Henson, both of their characters get killed early on. They're the best friends, but they come back. They decide not to cross over, and so they are undead. But not zombies, they're just like goofball dead mates.
Yes.
So there's that vibe through the movie of some things. Mm. So there's moments where it veers towards a Shaun of the Dead piss take of the genre.
Yep.
But then there's also some pretty hardcore action and stuff. So the stuff that was doing that I really enjoyed, but it was a pretty schlocky B-grade movie. And I think some people that have a problem with it maybe went in expecting, because it's Jamie Foxx, for it to be a much more polished thing, where it did look like a reasonably cheaply made Netflix movie where people were having a whole bunch of fun.
As long as the audience can have a bit of fun whilst watching them, and it's not too much like watching people having their own fun and you're just sitting off to the side.
I would happily watch a sequel to this.
Cool.
I'm not going to say it'll be a good movie, because it won't be a good movie, but it'll be a fun movie, and sometimes that's all you need.
Mm.
It's kind of like, okay, Ocean's 11 – with George Clooney and pals convincing everyone to give him a lot of money to have a lot of fun making a film, and the fun is captured, and that's what. And there are moments of this feel an awful lot like that of, you know, Jamie Foxx was a comedian first and was on sketch comedy and all this. He comes from that background, and you can see him pushing that element through the cracks of the film, even though his character is a lot more serious.
I also just quickly watched Inside the Mind of a Cat on Netflix. It's just a quick, easy doco about cats and people who are cat behaviorists. It's mainly American, but there were quite a few Japanese people interviewed as well, who are cat behaviorists and experts and whatnot. And I'm not going to say too much about it, because it's just, if you like cats, you're going to like it. If you don't, then you're not going to. But one interesting thing, and I reckon it's probably also the case with dogs and maybe other animals as well, but they'd done this research where they looked at American and Japanese cats, no particular breed, but they noticed that their demeanors, their behaviors were different. And they believe it's because of the human society and culture that they live in.
Sure.
Where American cats were less likely to be timid, where the with strangers, where the Japanese cats were a little more standoffish and tended to give more of their personality and attention to their owners. And I was like, well, that does make sense. Americans are quite, you know, compared to Japanese and a lot of other cultures, louder and more confident and that kind of thing. So that made me think about, like, Aussie cats and dogs just really laid back. Like, do people just walk out and go, this is my cat and my dog, and they're just lying on the ground. They're like, yeah, g'day. head back down. Make yourself at home, mate. Don't worry about it. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that if you have a particular animal, you know a lot of stuff.
Sure.
You know, like, you hear them say, oh, this, you know, they do this because of this, and you're like, oh, I've seen them do that. Or, no, I already knew that that's how they react. But that was interesting. I'd never thought about it before. So now I want to do – I want someone to do a study on maybe kangaroos in Aussie zoos versus kangaroos in other zoos around the world. Like, do they act differently? Because they're still the same animal, but they're so many questions.
But do you think the domestication?
It must be it must be, because it's the people that they hang out with, and the people that they hang out with are particular cultures and part of particular societies. So cool.
I really
like that train of thought. So that's kind of stuck with me.
That's not a watch. This is a watch. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Have you watched anything else worth mentioning?
Yes, I'm briefly mentioned that I watched the first episode of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law.
Oh, I did too. Yeah, it was fun.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was clearly moving the pieces around, so we now can start properly the next episode. We understand everything.
You got to do the setup.
One episode. You got to do the origin flashback.
Yeah.
But the CGI was significantly better than the trailers we had gotten earlier, led us to believe how things would look. It was pretty crazy that we got felt like 15 minutes of the Hulk on screen, and She-Hulk, less of She-Hulk because she can change herself, but like,
he just had
a lot of money
spent
on Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I enjoyed Jamila Jamil's entrance.
Yes.
I thought that
entrance
was
is the best way
awesome,
to put that.
And I'm very excited to see more of her, that's for sure.
There were some very cool little tidbits of setup of things coming, of framed photographs or posters on the wall behind of things of very, very small, minor, I'm talking Z-list Marvel characters that may pop up throughout the show. I believe I mentioned a while ago that Frogman's coming, which I thought would be the bottom of the barrel of where they're going, but I've heard some other stuff and it's like, holy shit, Frogman's a big character compared to some of this stuff. This is great. and I thought she did a really good job of everyone's when Tatiana Maslany. When she got announced, everyone was, oh, this makes total sense. You know, Orphan Black, she played like 17 characters or something like that. She'd be able to slip in between the two very easily. But they made a point that She-Hulk is Jen. She's the same person. So it was a brilliant way of playing with our expectation and addressing that quick. And I do feel like we're going to get more Ally McBeal vibes as it moves forward, which is appropriate because apparently there's an Ally McBeal reboot coming.
I did not know that. That's hilarious.
I forgot to put that in the news up there, but I just remembered.
Yeah, cool. I mean, not cool.
So we've got,
but yeah.
I think we've got 9 more episodes to go.
They're nice and
great.
Quick.
Yep, half-hour sitcom style.
That's all I want.
And, I think the funny factor is going to up from this point out. The narrative work's been done.
Those two female leads are total draw cards for me. Total. If they were not there, I'd still watch it, but I probably wouldn't be as invested. Do you know what I mean? Yep. It's just like, they're good. They're good.
But it's a weird one in that Disney Plus always drops their shows our time here in Sydney at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday evening. But She-Hulk comes out on a Thursday. Because
yeah, I was confused. I thought I was going to jump in a day late, but I wasn't. I was right there on time.
from what I understand, is Disney Plus has just got enough content coming out at the moment that they went, you know what, we've got to start sharing the love to another night here or there. Thursday is not traditionally a big night on any of the streamers.
Okay.
Thursday our time, you know. Friday is when Netflix, Amazon Prime drop their main things. HBO Max does throughout the week when stuff airs on TV. And Disney Plus has traditionally been Wednesday, so it looks like they're going to try and claim Thursday too.
Why not? No one else is doing it. Yeah, She-Hulk. So much green. It was a nice green, though. She's just got nice green skin tones.
Does. And to people, there was a cool someone, I didn't even think of this, but someone was like, Hulk, they had looking amazing. She-Hulk looked too clean. And someone said, well, that's because the beauty standards in Hollywood, might have even been the director, the beauty standards of Hollywood, you know, Mark Ruffalo has what we would consider an interesting face, and his facial scars and markings and all sorts of stuff are incorporated as a Hulk, and that is what you expect of a male face, whereas women traditionally do put on more makeup and things like that. So it would make sense that the makeup she's put on for the courtroom transitions over to She-Hulk, and that's why she has a bit more of a sheen and there's a little bit more gloss to her. I thought, when you explain it like that, bloody oath.
They've thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah. They really have.
There's reasons behind. Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah.
I have got a John Hamm quiz right here for you.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's do it.
John Hamm character names. I wanted to go in and have a look to see if there's a running theme, which we've discovered. There is a running theme with Dwayne Johnson and Keanu Reeves' characters' names. Let's see if John Hamm has the same issue. Well, really an issue, but the same. If it's the same case. So we're going to go first off, make it nice and easy. Mad Men, was his name John or Don?
His name was Don.
Mr. Draper.
I was giving everyone a moment at home to ponder and come up with the answer themselves.
John or Don, so close. In fact, in that case, I'm kind of along the my train of thought is Don's a bit more exotic than John in terms of names, but maybe not for that era.
Sure. It's
probably both quite. Do you remember the 2015 miniseries Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp?
Yes.
Do they all merge into one for you? Because they do for me.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Yes. So he was in this one. Was his character's name the Eagle or the Falcon? Also, do you remember him in it? I'm going to say
I don't. And I'm going to go with the Falcon.
He was the Falcon.
Oh,
good one.
It feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good that.
The Falcon. Slow motion.
Eagle is the name you give yourself when you think you're a stuntman.
Yeah.
But the Falcon is what your buddies call somewhere, you someone's, massive weekend.
Yeah, someone's definitely given him that name. The upcoming Fargo season four, five. The upcoming Fargo season, is his character Roy or Ron? We're starting to hear Don.
I am noticing a through line, and so I'm going to go with Ron.
It's Roy.
Oh, you got me.
You got me. It's Roy.
You led me down the bloody garden.
Didn't I? What about Good Omens? He was a very distinct character. So was he Gabriel or Adam?
Oh, that's a good question.
Both hang out upstairs.
They do. I do remember his role, so because of that I can determine which two. He was the Angel Gabriel.
Mm-hmm. He absolutely was. I liked him as that character.
Me too.
He was very good.
Very droll and manipulative.
They are either making or have made or will be making a season two.
Yes.
There were promises of, so I'm holding them to it.
I think it's in the can.
Cool. I want to watch it. I mean, a lot happened that first season, so it'd be nice to check in with them again. He was in Top Gun Maverick. Was his character's name? Yep. Bo or Chad? Which one of those classic American names for that kind of person would he have been? Bo or Chad?
They are very American names.
Imagine Bo's in Aussie. In Aussie, in Australia? Be one or two, but
we get Bo's, but we spell it B-E-A-U. Whereas in the States, Bo is B-O.
And then sometimes here in Australia, you get Bo's, but they're the names of Emma Wiggle songs, and there's about 20 of them. And if you get the wrong Bo song, you're in trouble.
Oh, there's too many Bo songs.
But have a beautiful day.
I'm going to go with Bo.
Correct.
Hurrah.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, right, that your son is in the air, is in the Air Force for another country.
Yeah.
Right? And then you find out that he's been shot down and killed. And somehow you find out that the fighter pilot, his name was Chad.
Yeah, it'd be worse. It would be worse.
It'd be worse if he got killed by Chad.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. You would never forget.
No.
Final one.
I mean, you'd probably never forget that your son got killed.
Oh, yeah, that anyway. Too. That too.
But the Chad would be the Chaddy on top.
Yeah, that's the salt and the X in the wound. Yeah. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Amazing show. Very funny. Mm. He was the crazy guy who locked her and a few others down in a bunker, said it was the end of the world, but it wasn't really. Was his character's name Peter Stephen Norman Stephen or Richard Wayne Gary Wayne? So there's only two names there. First name is Peter Stephen Norman Stephen. That's your first option. Or
yes.
Richard Wayne Gary Wayne.
Well, this show was written by Tina Fey,
so
right?
What would she want?
I feel like that double barrel Wayne business.
It's all about the Wayne.
Because it's close to Wayne and she enjoys that sort of joke.
You got in her head then. You were in her mind. That was amazing. You're right, though.
That was a good quiz.
That was a good quiz. We're learning stuff, you know, like do these big actors get cast and then they name the character? Or do these actors get cast because that he looks like a Don?
He looks like a Chad.
He's a Roy.
That's a big question.
I don't think anyone's thought about it, not even casting directors.
Probably not.
And if they think about it, if they start to, they're going to overthink and then they'll question themselves constantly. It's not going to be good. It was good work. We enjoyed all of that. At least I did. The whole entire episode.
You know, that we just did a John Hamm related quiz, which was great.
Mm.
And neither of us mentioned anything to do with Christmas Ham.
Oh, no, you just did then.
I'm unbelievably, there's already chatter starting about what we're going to do.
Oh, no, there was chatter on the weekend for me as well. So whose house is it? Whose turn is it this year? That's probably one of the earliest. We're still in August. I think people just want to get excited about stuff again.
Do you know what I'm excited about?
What?
Do you know what I'm excited? I can't believe I didn't even mention this
really?
In the news. A Taco Bell is opening really close to home, like walking distance to my house.
Wait. There was a Taco Bell like Warringah Road in French's Forest
or something.
You used to
have one years ago that was combined with the KFC.
On the way down to
I used to drive out there specifically for that Taco Bell. There was no reason for me to go that way, but I'd go and get Taco Bell. So Taco Bell was gone for years, and they recently started coming back into the Australian market. There's a few spots around and stuff, and there's one in, you know, over in Alexandria and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
None close. This one is opening real close to home. I can walk there. It means it's going to be Uber eatable.
Uber Eats. Did you ever hear about Dan Reichert? He was on, I think he was in Giant Bomb at that time, and he got married at a Taco Bell.
Nice.
That's how much he loves Taco Bell and obviously how much his wife loves him.
Taco Bell's the business. And it's one of those things that, like, I have had people who do not like fast food much. Yep. I have convinced them to come and eat Taco Bell with me, and they went in there thinking it would be trash, and they sat down with, this is all right. And then I have other people who love fast food who've eaten and gone, this is not much chop. So it's this weird thing. It can be really good, or it can just give you the shits.
There's probably a bit of a fight, right, between them and Gomez and Guzman and Gomez, the yellow and black shop,
and Mad Max. They're each going for different things. Guzman is kind of all about healthy, fresh ingredients. Yeah. Mad Max is about big portions.
Taco Bell is exactly what you think it is.
It's cheap.
Yeah. Do they have a salad bowl? Like, do they have a burrito bowl as well?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, right. Like, you're not looking.
They got churros. No. I posted about this on Facebook last night, how excited I was. And yeah. Abe, bless his heart, chimed in. And he's like, oh, hopefully they have some vegan options.
Of course.
And I just responded with a GIF and someone going, oh. Sorry, Abe.
And then he said, dude. And that was the end of the conversation. Oh, I reckon you should have tacos for lunch now.
Oh, you no, it's not open yet. It doesn't open until the 30th. I'm going to go there on opening day because they've got a competition. They're going to get even more bang on. Perfect for Tom. They're giving away a branded Mountain Dew fridge full of Mountain Dew. I mean, come on.
There's nothing else. There's no other person that deserves this more.
I want a branded Mountain Dew fridge full of Mountain Dew that I won from a Taco Bell that opened near my house.
Then you're going to have to start your own Twitch stream and have that in the background so that you can sort of play whatever game you're playing, then pull away on your chair, lean over, get a Mountain Dew from your Mountain Dew fridge and come back and be like, have you seen this limited edition Mountain Dew? I'm just going to drink it now because I can. I want to see
it. Seems like a lot of work.
Really? I'd subscribe.
Oh, I just want to get that fridge and then put it in the garage.
Okay. All right. Well.
I just want to have it be a cool thing to have in the garage.
I had you as a Twitch streamer. I was going to figure out what kind of things you're going to stretch. You're like a variety streamer, but no, just garage. Okay.
We all know if I start streaming, I'm going to end up on OnlyFans. Don't encourage me.
Yeah, it's too much. It's a rabbit hole that no one needs to go down. Speaking of things that no one wants, and no one wants the end of this, but it is the end. Until next week.